at all. But it was only 2 days before he was about to go to trial, and he was about to go to trial, Your Honor, not because his case was ready for trial, but to meet a public case. And I stepped in because it was my responsibility to do so. I'm not claiming any glory. Any of you would have done. Any lawyer that at least was raised in the school that I was raised in with a sense of responsibility to his profession and to the public. I was willing to sell this man's life for some magazine royalties on a picture on a book case, just as I believe these distinguished gentlemen would be in it were they in the private practice, or Your Honor, where he saw. Now, Your Honor, Mr. Haynes wasn't here at that time. This former made a statement that he was going to be trying to meet a publication day. And as I recall in reference, particularly as to Look magazine articles that it emanated from Mr. Bradford Hewitt. Now, Your Honor, I don't see how counsel for the defendant has to get that counsel for the defendant said he'd meet a publication date. And I recall Mr. Haynes never came into this court and never asked this court to allow Mr. Hewitt, who had been writing these articles for national worldwide publication, to go into his cell. The very thing that counsel for the defendant now is castigating counsel for the defendant then for doing, he's going beyond that and asking now to let Mr. Hewitt interview Ray in his cell. I can only gather one thing from that, that there will be, in all probability, more publicity surrounding this case if the court pleases. Mr. Foreman reminds me of the hand of Esau today, but it's still the voice of Jacob on December the 12th. I don't see where this is compatible, if the court pleases, with the statements he made to this court when he entered into this case. I don't see where this is going to benefit or help this defendant receive a fair and impartial trial that he's entitled to in a court of law. So we're against this motion, if the court pleases, for those reasons.
Speaking of voices, Your Honor. The argument of the distinguished prosecuting attorney more nearly resembles that of Balaam's equine companion than almost anything else I've heard mentioned in this courtroom today. The enjoyed the long but very unnecessary reading of my remarks. Unnecessary because Your Honor heard them all. But it's consistent with the logic of the prosecuting attorney in dragging a straw man into his argument for the purpose of destroying him. Reminds me of his technique when he drags Bell in when Young and the other three members of the board of the SCLC, Dr. Kevin Lowry and Dr. William Rutherford, were the subject of discussion. I will gladly furnish the prosecuting attorney with a copy of all of my published remarks in all cases if he wants to do that. But I don't think this is the place, and he hasn't addressed his arguments to the issues involved here. This is not a, as a matter of fact, part of that contract, I think Your Honor's been furnished with it, I recall, has to do with publication dates, which is the very thing we want to avoid. That is, any publication, if possible. Of course, Powell's company, Cole's company, it's called, are not part of the contract and are in possession of whatever there is, but to the extent of our ability, we want to delay and prevent any publication until this case shall have been completed. But that's not the essential part of the request. The essential part is to ascertain whether or not and how much and when. Whether at trial now or at some future time, it wouldn't matter. The money could be, some money could be advanced against the possibility. There's a possibility that due to some orders of this court, there may never be any money available. I don't know. But we have here a man whose sole possession is the intangible value of whatever his contract.
QA was brought into an office I was using at the time and introduced to me by someone, I believe, from the commercial field. He gave me in general outline the connection of the case and the fact that he had referred the defendant in this case to Mr. Haynes. He requested the right to go up and see James Earl Ray at the time. He had told me about this contract that he had with him to write this material. And I don't know that I turned him down that day. I was so overwhelmed by people coming to see me who had everything that they had to say outlined and at fingers' tips, so to speak. I like a little time to think about things that I do, things of importance. But I certainly didn't give Mr. Hewitt the right to go up and see Mr. Ray, and I never did. Of our conversation, several things that were brought up in it that I thought it wise to send to Mr. Hewitt a certified copy of all the orders that had been entered in the case. I requested Mr. Hewitt not to print anything or publish anything for this trial. I know that anything I say here in open court tends to generate further publicity, but I must say this. I think that what Mr. Hewley has published in Russia has had a tremendous damage on this case and on our ability to, within any reasonable length of time, or short time at any rate, to get a jury. This story and look was, it seemed to me, well, let's leave out the scene to me. The story and look, the first one, came out 2 weeks before the case was set to trial. The second one came out on the day of the trial. Publication that he sold his story to is located out of the state of Tennessee. I can't enforce my contempt orders in foreign jurisdictions, but I can't extradite anybody from contempt. I think what the plea that you've made here is that we have this bizarre arrangement between this defendant, who has worldwide publicity, notoriety for the crime with which he is charged with. I think that his notoriety and his worth as a thing of value to the news media has been enhanced by the orders that have been entered by this court. These orders that have been entered by this court are what I conceived it my duty to be, but in the light of certain decisions of the Supreme Court of the United States, they have resulted in a virtual monopoly. And, frankly, I think that you haven't given any reasons, overriding reasons, for Mr. Hewitt to see Mr. Ray. It's my understanding that another story in Look magazine is to be published this month, the 18th, I believe, which is on the eve again of our trial is tentatively set for the 3rd. Mr. Hewitt is a well-known author. He was a lecturer, I believe, until he was lecturing in England when Ray was arrested over there. Extremely mobile. He's extremely mobile. You hear him one night on Tonight Show, and then you read a day or two later that he's making a lecture somewhere. He's related to me. He can write a dash off a novel in a month or so and sell it for $250,000. It's very funny. But my orders last until the jury enters this court with a verdict in this case. I see no reason except for your convenience and Mr.